Star and Shadow Radio. Star and Shadow Radio. Good morning. Hello, this is We Can't Promise Anything, advice with Marion and Gilly. And this week it is also with another agony aunt, a guest agony aunt. This is the first time that I'm not broadcasting live for this little bit because I have to do something else at work. So one of the other Star and Shadow broadcasters has very kindly agreed to press go. Thank you very, 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 very much. I hope you enjoy the show. We really are short of problems at the moment. Apparently our networks are full of people who are very self-sufficient and don't need our help. So please, if you're listening and you have a problem you would like Marion and I to talk about, do email it in to wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com. I really enjoyed doing this with Greg this time. I hope you enjoy it too. A long one, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
What did you think, Marion?
Well, I think I haven't really got a proper memory, Gilly, because I can't really remember the early day jingles, right? It's all starting to kind of morph into a great big blob, but I thought it was a little bit punchy. It was nice.
Okay. Greg, what did you think?
I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I think that was one of my favorites, if not my favorite, because I've heard all of them because I've listened to all of the shows before.
Ooh, number one fan. So yes, everyone who's listening, all 12 to 14 people who listen every week, one of you could be on the show one day, just like Greg.
Yay!
So we've got a guest agony aunt this fortnight for this show. The great Gregory Michael Warhead, full name, always.
Great, thank you for having me. I'm very glad to be here.
Oh, it's lovely that you're here, Greg. It's lovely.
So Greg is a friend of the show and my friend and my collaborator in professional life. And now you're my collaborator in amateur life.
Here we go, I'm following you around everywhere.
I know. What would you do without me, Greg? What would you do without me? Greg, why did you want to be on the show?
Well, I really enjoy talking about, I do kind of enjoy talking about people's problems, but I enjoy talking about my own problems, and I enjoy hearing about other people's problems, my friends, or whoever else, but because I really enjoy, digging into talking about real stuff. And talking about problems is sometimes a way of doing something that's not small talk. And I like that.
Yeah. Marion, it's going to be funny, isn't it? With three of us.
Yes, I know. It's whole new dynamics, isn't it? But exciting, I think. And I think we've all got very different life experiences. So it'd be lovely to have whatever you bring to the show. Greg, it'd be lovely to hear your contribution.
I'm very excited.
We haven't instituted a hand-raising policy or anything, so we might just talk over one another, but I think that's okay. Marion and I do that anyway.
Yeah, we do. And I think that's fine. It shows who's going to win. A little bit complex, you know?
It certainly emphasises the amateur nature of the advice that we're giving.
Well, as you know, Greg and Gilly, it's like, we just do this, we don't rehearse, we don't promise anything, we just love to chat and share opinions, and that's what we're doing once again today.
All based
on other people's problems. That's great, I'm on board with it.
Yeah.
Shall we try the first problem then?
I think that would be a fantastic idea. Yes, please, Gilly.
Okay, I'll read it out then. Okay, it says, Dear Marion, Gilly and special guest. It must be someone who listened to the last show.
Yes, it must.
Special guest.
And were paying attention.
Very, yeah, we like listeners who are avid note takers. My problem sounds trivial, but it really isn't to me. Now that lockdown is easing, I went to visit a friend this week whom I haven't seen for ages. They've had lots of work done to their house and are very proud of what they've created. The thing is, I hate what they've done. I think they've ripped the soul out of what was a beautiful, characterful house and have created a mishmash of all sorts of conflicting styles. I completely accept that everyone has the right to create a home they'll be happy in, but my problem is that I don't want to offend them by letting my feelings show. At the same time, I can't say I think they've done a great job when I don't. Please, can you give me some tips to help me not jeopardise a valued friendship?
Well then.
Well.
Well, I've been in this situation before. Have you experienced anything like this before? Not necessarily about a house, but someone who you care about says, what do you think about this? And you don't think the same as them.
Well, it's a little bit like, because Gilly and I, you know, both make, you know, shows and performances and things like that. It's a bit like when you go to someone's show and they're your friend and you want to support them and then you think the show is terrible and then you have to face them afterwards.
Yeah, happens all the time.
You know, that happens all the time.
Now, the principle is exactly the same of you don't want to offend the friend, but at the same time, you don't want to be dishonest. Right. So I was thinking about it, and I think sometimes when the friend of this person who are obviously really proud of what they've created, I don't think they really want your opinion. I think they really want to be praised or validated for what they've done. So if you can let your opinion kind of slide a little bit, and more give them some appreciation for the work investment that they've made, you can not compromise yourself, maybe. And instead of saying, oh, I'm really not keen on this for whatever reason, which would be the honest truth, maybe you have to have a little, not repertoire exactly, but you have to see it from a slightly different perspective. Mm. And maybe say, do you know, I'm really delighted to see what you've created, all the hard work you've put in, and you can still be positive, but not lie.
I think it's like, I think what you point out, Marion, is that they're not looking for your view, because if they'd been looking for your view, they would have asked beforehand.
So yeah, correct.
It's a good parallel with like making performances, because if you really wanted their take on it before the show, this specific person's take, if you'd wanted their take on your show before it went out before an audience, you would have invited them in. You would have asked them.
Yes.
I often ask my friends, like, oh, I've always wanted to do something behind behind my sofa on that wall. What do you think I should do? And I'm not coming in and going, do you like that abomination that I've put on my wall? Or I just want people to... I always think like unsolicited advice is not a good idea, or unsolicited negative criticism is not a good idea.
Well, and also advice about something which is a completed, finished product is not the time for advice. That moment has passed. So it's not really about you anymore. It's more about giving them some sort of... validation, some praise for whatever you do, if it's house renovation, making a performance piece, there's a lot of work, blood, sweat and tears goes into it. So the relief of just what's been accomplished is it's just kind of giving some lovely feedback on that, saying something positive about that, but not necessarily sharing. They're not asking you to bare your soul about what you think about it.
Yeah, maybe. I agree with all of that. And I think, especially like you say, something where this, I mean, if they're like, if they've remodeled their house, that will cost a lot of money. And yeah, it's not, you know, it will be done because that's the way they like it. And, you know, I agree, you can, you know, like when you see someone's show that you care about the person, but you don't like the show. There are, I mean, we all know, those of us who have done that, who have also, people have seen my shows, I can tell they don't like it, but they want to support me. There is a certain repertoire of things that people say where they, you know, they'll say like, how is that for you? Or well, or like kind of congratulations or something kind of slightly generic things where like, I can sort of tell that they didn't like it, but I don't care because I know that they're trying to support me and that's what they care about, you know. And in this case, you can also like try to see it a bit more through their eyes. And, you know, some of those things could be like, oh, this, like this house is so you, you know, or like, you know, something like that.
Terrible.
Yeah, but the fact is, if you're not gonna, the other option is to just lie a little bit and say you love it. If that's possible at all, do that. If that's not possible, maybe you can say some things where, yeah, maybe they'll be able to tell. But if they press you on it, then that's on them, I think. You know, you know? If they really press you to try and say something over the top that you love it and you really just can't or didn't hide it, I can't hide it, then, you know, maybe if that's really what they're going to press for, then that's what they get.
My concern would be, you know, when you say you like something and then suddenly the next time it's your birthday, you get something like that, that it would, that there's potential in like a close relationship to perpetuate tasteless tat, you know?
I mean, the other option is to actually, depending on what kind of friend this is, you know, I'm, you know, just to like workshop a different idea here, you could just really go in very direct and very, very open and honest and, you know, be like, you know, this isn't to my taste, but I really appreciate what you've done. And actually, like, I was a little bit self-conscious because I don't want to hurt your feelings because I care about you really very much and I want to support you. I mean, this is probably making way too big of a deal out of it anyway, but I'm just thinking like, it can depend on how close that friend is and what type of friend they are as well.
Yeah, with like my dad puts just awful crap on the walls and I just tell him.
Yeah.
No, he's not really bothered what I, you know, he's not really that bothered what I think.
Yeah, I mean, likewise, when someone comes to my show and someone who's a friend and said, well, that wasn't to my taste, but I can recognize that was a lot of work and a lot of interesting things that you've done there and well done for that. And I appreciate that. You know, and that can be okay sometimes.
So really what you're saying is it's also an understanding of the kind of relationship you have with the person.
I think so.
And actually what you can get away with saying. So it's about using your judgment about what's the best approach to take. And sometimes you can be a little bit more honest and sometimes you can't, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but the last thing you would ever want to do is actually hurt somebody that you cared about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Friendship first, communication.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So I hope the writer of this problem gets something out of, I hope we've made some suggestions that will be of some assistance and help.
Let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we love feedback, don't we, Gilly?
We love feedback.
Yeah.
I think we should move on to the next problem. You're going to read this one out, aren't you?
I am, yes, right. Dear Marion and Gilly, so this was obviously somebody who's listened before 2 weeks ago. I love listening to your show and would value your opinion about a problem I have. I have a son in his mid-30s who still lives at home with his father and I. He's had the same girlfriend for a number of years. She has her own flat and my son stays with her often, but they don't live together and his official address is with us. I love him very much And I think it's time he had a place of his own or moved in with his girlfriend permanently. But he shows no sign of doing either. When I try to speak to him about his plans, he always has a reason why now isn't a good time to talk, and he's dashing off somewhere. I'm at the point where I'm going round in circles and thinking myself to a standstill. Do you have any suggestions to help? I suspect we have lots of suggestions to help here.
I can't believe that this writer has managed to get themselves into this situation. Like, this person, first, I think the first thing you've got to do is take responsibility for the situation. This person, your son hasn't done this to you. You've created the conditions to make this possible for your son. And that unless you can sort of get your head around that as a starting point, there's more things to say, but that it's going to be very difficult to get anywhere if you don't accept your part in this silly situation.
But at the same time, Giddy, there's nothing wrong with sons who live at home all their lives. If everybody's happy with that,
sure,
it's fine. But obviously everybody isn't happy with that, because the mum has written to us and said, you know, she thinks it's time for the son to kind of move on a little bit.
And I think it's probably worth asking too, like, does this person who wrote in want him to move out because for herself, because that's what she herself wants, and how she would rather not have him in that space? Or is there a kind of idea that, like, he's a certain age, or he has a girlfriend, therefore he needs to move out? Oh, you know, I think it's worth asking that question too, because those are two slightly different things. You know, if she doesn't mind him being there otherwise, but there's a kind of pressure of, like, oh, he's at this point in his life, therefore he should live, you know, on his own, then that's a different thing than I've checked in with myself and this is what I want, you know.
Yeah, is it an act of continued parenting or not? It might be.
Well, I think the mum has to ask some questions, really, to herself, first of all, so mum, what do you do in this domestic setup that you have? Do you cook? Do you clean? Do you put meals on the table? Do you shop? Do you charge rent? Do you have boundaries? So I think it's for mum to look at the domestic setup first and say, what is it? Have I let things drift a little bit here? And is this just like an over-comfortable situation for the son to find himself in? Because really, he's got the best of all worlds, really, with absolutely zero responsibility.
Yeah, if we understand it like that, then it's essentially like a teenager. I mean,
yeah,
I do think there is something to be said for, like, taking a sort of shared responsibility for the babyfication of young men. You know, you see it in films all the time of, like, men are incapable, men can't put a wash on. Oh, the woman, I was talking to a woman I knew yesterday in the park, and she was like, oh, well, I've just got to pick up my boyfriend's sort of sandy pants all the time because of where he's gone for, like, a dip in the sea. And I was like, why? Why are you doing that? Don't do that. That's ludicrous. The man's in his 30s.
It's disabling.
Completely. And it then positions women as a kind of, like, nag, when actually it's just because men won't look after themselves. And sometimes that's because parents haven't said, you want some dinner? Have you dinner? You want clean clothes? You want to wash clothes then?
Yeah. But, Gilly, it creates a dependency out of love, not out of anything other than love. That was just my battery went a little bit flat, which I'm getting a bit concerned about. Anyway, never mind. It's out of nothing but love. So I think what we're going to maybe talk about is tough love, not soft love. Of sometimes you have to be quite clear, you know.
But then that's a problem that she talks about in what she said. that like, oh, the sun always seems to be dashing off somewhere. It's never a convenient time to talk. And how do you deal with that? I mean, I think she might have to be really, really, I wonder if if there's someone else in the house, if it's just the mum and the son or there are other people around, but she might have to be really straight and say, we need to talk about our continued living situation together. I would like to do this on Sunday at 4 p.m. Will you be in? And if he says no, then she can say, well, when would suit you? Let's talk about it. Please set aside 2 hours. She might have to be really prescriptive like that, in a way that, like, actually people don't really like being. People like being like, oh, well, you know, let's just have a chat about that sometimes. And I know this because I'm someone who really likes structure. So I like to set a time and define how long we're going to talk about it. And people really resist it. But I think it's really useful to have clear goals, clear timings, clear responsibilities in that conversation.
But not everybody has that capability, do you?
But what you know, would hold them back?
Well, because a lot of people have a natural tendency to want to avoid things that are uncomfortable. And if I can put my hand up to that a little bit sometimes, you know. And that habits are very... if you're in a comfortable habit, why would you get kind of programmed? It's not out of malice, it's just out of habit. And we're just talking about this problem based on the limited information that we have, but I'm sure none of the people in it are horrible people. They're just in a routine that everybody's not happy with, and that maybe, you know, mum's lived with it for years, but now the years are passing and it's not quite as acceptable as it was a while ago.
Yeah, I think it is worth recognizing kind of what you just said, which is like this kind of behavior and this interaction and this the qualities of this relationship are in a habit, and it's actually not working for everyone. In fact, it's really not working for the writer here.
Yeah.
So there does need to be a way to shift some things about how that communication is happening. And I agree with you, Gilly, one way to do that is to be super structured about it, because then the structure is doing some of the work that you may not feel comfortable with moment by moment when you're trying to negotiate that interaction. And actually, if you do set a time and you do put these boundaries in place, that's one of the great things about boundaries and structures, is that they do some work themselves, you know, and you just sort of have to then fill them in and abide by them and agree to them and communicate them, you know. And I think the writer here, one of the, you know, there's any number of ways that, you know, any of us throughout our lives find ourselves in situations that that we maybe didn't want to be in, or have accidentally found, you know, suddenly realized that we're in this position, that maybe we played our own part in getting ourselves there, but the fact is now we're here. And so we have to find a way to make a change if that's what we want to do. And I think that, you know, like you say, Gilly, like, I mean, for me, I find it very helpful to do, because I sometimes get very self-conscious with talking to people, and especially if it's like slightly confrontational, or I know the other person is resisting, but I sometimes find it easier to write it down. And so sometimes that can help with communicating thoughts in a more full way, that you can write it all down, make sure you're saying what you want to say, and text it to them or email it to them, or write them a note or something like that. But also, you know, so there's that. And then there's also, I think there's, you know, the writer says something about getting stuck in a circle or something like that. And I think one good way of getting unstuck is to just think to yourself, okay, I've got to do something different here. And in a way, it almost doesn't matter what it is that's different at first. And as long as you think to yourself, I'm doing something different this time. And what that does is it can relieve the pressure of every single little decision feeling like it's the right or wrong decision. And it takes some of that pressure off something being the absolute right decision every time. And in fact, if I'm just doing something different, and then I do that other thing different, and then I do that other thing different, pretty soon you find you're unstuck, I think, you know. So that could be one way of thinking about this. In these interactions, you know, she might be saying something that is similar to her son every time she wants to talk about this. And then he says the same thing back, which is, oh, I'm just rushing off or doing this and that. And so obviously doing the same thing over and over again is what gets you stuck in that cycle. Mm. So if you can just do something different, and slowly you'll find that different things are happening.
Yeah, a more experimental approach. I mean, I think the thing that you've sort of said about discomfort is interesting, because obviously, like, at one point, to deal with it was so much more uncomfortable than to live with it. And it sounds like that's sort of at a tipping point now. And yeah. What I'd be nervous about is, are you going to make changes that just make it more comfortable for you to live with it, when actually what you want is for the situation to radically change? So to sort of keep your goal in mind, if your goal really is for what either reason, whether you think like this is holding your child back and you don't want to do that anymore, or that you want the house to yourself, or you want to, you know, downsize, or you want to not have someone else to cook for or whatever, then to, even if the changes are incremental, to know what I actually, what for now, the provisional end goal is I want to live apart from my child.
Yeah.
So that you don't accept lesser victories as like the real deal.
It's a really good point. And I think that it's also something that if you imagine that, imagine what it is going to be like to, for your son to not live with you anymore. Imagine what that's going to feel like. And then that could keep you going and motivate you to do the difficult thing, which is to actually bring it up and have the conversation, which, you know, we should also recognize is probably a really difficult thing to do for many, many reasons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a valid thing to think of as difficult. We all have to have really difficult conversations sometimes that we don't want to have. But sometimes if you imagine what it will be once it's resolved, that can help you think of it as worth it to have the difficult conversation.
I totally agree. And the benefits of having that conversation completely outweigh the difficulty of having it in the first place. And from experience, often when I actually get something started, it gets easier, because it's the thought of starting it that is actually the obstacle to starting it in a weird way, you know? It's like fear. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, to the mum, I love the idea of writing it down. I love the idea of having a prescriptive time. I love the idea of kind of making it into a little proper little house meeting, right? And maybe just initiating that as an idea and as a more regular event, and starting small and then start to just work on it, and hopefully everybody will be really a million times happier in the long term.
I think we've given lots of good practical ideas, but also questions for the writer to ask herself before she sort of implements anything. It sounds to me that there is some thinking to do before being hastily jumping into anything out of like resentment or irritation.
Absolutely. And at the same time, we're hugely sympathetic and supportive of the writer and completely understand how just habits and behaviour patterns just become the norm. Yeah. Until they're not. Until you don't like them anymore. And that's kind of reflective of life in general, really. And it's, you've got to do something about it. So writer, be brave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Courage.
Yeah.
I think we should take a little break after that now. Shall we have our weekly cup of tea, a fortnightly cup of tea?
Oh, yes. I think it's defo time to put the kettle on.
Great. Right.
See you in a minute. far back, I ate a handful of cashews and talked about redistributive economics. What did you guys do?
Well, I've got a lovely new cup of tea, which is making me very happy. A little bit of your conversation about economics. Sorry, Greg.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I enjoyed hearing about the economics, and I had a glass of very cold water with cucumber and mint in it because it's quite hot today in London.
Ooh, that's refreshing. Oh yeah, we should say
it was very refreshing.
Greg's not in Newcastle; he's in London.
It's true. It's true.
And he's obviously not.
It's probably a different climate.
It's a totally different climate down here, let me tell you.
Every time Greg comes to Newcastle, he's like, why didn't you tell me it was going to be cold?
I have been quite shocked at times getting on the train in London and then getting off in Newcastle, what the difference actually can be.
Yeah, it's wild.
But yeah, it is.
Every single time you sort of like pull your coat further in.
I'm always like, I wasn't dressed for this.
It's chilly. Like, yeah, we're on the North Sea. You're even more southern though, because obviously, as we can tell from your accent, you're not actually originally from London.
You might be able to tell I'm not originally from London. I'm originally from Texas. I'm from Dallas, Texas.
Oh my God.
And that is a different climate.
Yeah.
The first time I met Greg, he was wearing cowboy boots.
Oh. Yeah, I did used to wear them a lot.
I love cowboy boots.
I love them too.
Friends.
Do you not wear cowboy boots anymore, Greg?
No, I don't, because you see, I used to be more okay with wearing bootcut jeans, and now I just don't do them.
It's just that, yeah.
It's just not me anymore.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
We should say that Marion's battery is going to go, so this is a bit of like on the edge broadcasting.
Yeah, it is.
It might be. And it's a good job that Greg's here this week, is all I
think. It is. You're our little safety net, Greg.
So we should always have a backup, Agony Ann, from here on in. Yeah.
Just in case.
If my battery goes, it goes, which is a bit of a euphemism for my life, really.
Gosh, Marion. It's existential today. Shall we go to the next problem?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
This problem is from Dan, and he says, I started divorce proceedings today, and I'm struggling with the idea of letting go of who I used to be and figuring out what happens next. So I guess, what do you do when your identity is bound up in a long-term relationship? And how do you deal with that when you're isolated, you're left to pick up the pieces, you know you're fucked financially? How do you separate your sense of self from a really wank situation? That is exactly what Dan sent. Oh, it's dead hard, isn't it?
Well, Dan.
Oof. Yeah, this is a tough one. It's a tough experience to go through.
Especially in lockdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel his pain. But I think maybe his life... He must have been very unhappy for his marriage to come to a divorce situation anyway. So it hasn't just happened out of the blue. I don't think. This is as much information as we've got to go on. So sometimes I'm inclined to pad things out with a little bit of what I think myself. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And it's just an opinion. You know, we're not making any promises. So. It's we're just talking about our opinions, and life must have been pretty bloody and unhappy for it to come to a divorce situation, because I don't think it's anything that most people do lightly. It's something that's arrived at because it's the marriage situation has become untenable. So this is as kind of as bad as it's going to get. And it maybe if you can see that the pain now gives you the opportunity to move on to a happier life, whatever that is, or the alternative, is to stick with the pain of an unhappy marriage, which is destructive as well. There's no remedy. There's no quick fix that makes you happy overnight. It's a job in hand. Anyway, that's what I think. So I think Dan has been, it's a courageous thing to do to accept that a marriage, and you have to grieve for the death of the dreams. Nobody gets married thinking they're going to get divorced. You get married because you think you've met the person who you want to spend the rest of your life with. So you have to kind of grieve for those dreams aren't going to come true. They're over. So there's a period of it's all right to mourn what's not going to be before you start, but it will pass, is what I think. I don't know, you know. What do you think, Greg?
Yeah. I think everything you said I agree with there, and that there is no easy answer to this. It's a really difficult situation, and any solution to this that might seem like an easy thing to relieve the kind of difficulty is probably not going to be the right thing, or not something that's going to be lasting. But I do think that, you know, these situations are always really, while they are really difficult, any situation that really makes you re-examine your identity and who you are and what you want can also be a really good thing, you know, and it can be something really exciting that yes, is a struggle and yes, is difficult, but it's also something that not everyone gets the opportunity to do, or finds themselves in a context where they have the opportunity to sort of update themselves and check in with themselves and say, who am I now and what do I want now? Because so often when you are in a long-term relationship like that, a very serious long relationship, you know, it's you know, in my experience, in some ways, a part of you almost gets frozen as you were at whatever age you entered that relationship. You know, I think it can be very difficult to grow in a way that is very true to yourself while also, you know, doing that in such close connection with another person who is also doing their growing and changing. And that can be there's obviously very great and nice things that can happen from being in connection with someone like that for a long period of time and learning from about yourself by reflecting off that other person. But it's also easy to get kind of stuck in a version of yourself that might have been outdated, that might now be outdated. And so I think these situations, when you get to think differently about yourself, can also be really exciting, because you find out that all of us are actually really quite malleable in terms of the part of what we're capable of, who we are, what we might want, and that can change. And it can be very difficult to reckon with that, but it can also be really exciting. And I think that as time goes on, as it's fair to feel the difficulty, to feel the kind of pain of something ending and a part of yourself, you know, having to let go of a part of yourself or a version of yourself. But on the flip side, it can also be really exciting once some of that, the immediacy of that pain dies down, and once new things start happening and you get to see what new things your life is going to be and what new things that you are capable of and what new things that you want. And I've found that sometimes it can be such an invigorating thing to discover new things about yourself. Mm. And I think these difficult experiences can be opportunities for that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are lots of new things to come, but sometimes when a relationship breaks down, you don't see the new things, you just see the great big empty hole that's left by the the ending of a very committed, what started off as a very committed relationship. And it's difficult to see that there's new things coming along, but there are new, but that void will fill, and it will fill with different things. And the exciting thing is to learn about yourself, and that actually you might be capable of, Dan might discover that he's capable of things that he never dreamt.
Yeah.
That, and have adventures, you know, and face the fear, do different things, see what you think, say yes to any invitations that come along, just be open to everything that comes your way, and then start to narrow down and find out what you're made of.
I also wonder if it's like noticing all these different parts. So you've talked about grieving and acknowledging that, and then talking about like being open to like who you might be now, like this sort of moment where you can go, what is this today? Who am I today? And not rushing any of the parts. So like when I'm thinking about like the different things that Dan wrote about, like I'm sort of thinking, okay, so your identity is bound up in a long-term relationship. So one of the things probably to like put a little like no on is, let's not like go straight into the idea of another relationship, as because it's going to be very hard for that not just to be like a replacement. And that doesn't give you the opportunity to grieve and celebrate these, or grieve and experiment with who you are. So, I mean, my perspective is that I've dated a lot of people who have recently come out of long-term relationships. And what I find is that they haven't done their work yet. And so it means that I'm never going to be able to have a very healthy, fun relationship with them, because they've got too much to do, and I can't be the one to do that with them because it's far too painful. And I've tried many times, and I keep learning that it's not a good idea. And then I look at the different parts of what Dan has said. So one thing that I notice with friends and like people I really care about who are in long-term relationships, and I've definitely been guilty of this myself during relationships, is that it's easy to like not see like wider connections or wider intimacies to be important. And it's possible that like maybe Dan's neglected some of his friendships, other forms of relationships, colleagues, neighbors, family, whatever. And I guess what I would offer is like, maybe like just, I mean, I'm not saying like romance needs to not happen, but on a kind of equal footing, like invest in those other relationships as a matter of priority and a matter of urgency. And I know it might feel like, oh, well, I've not got the resources to like go back to that friend I've not spoken to in 18 months. But most people will understand if you reach out and say, hey, I'm really sorry I've not been in touch. It's been a bit of a wild time. Do you fancy going for a walk, which is what we can do now? Or do you fancy meeting for a cup of tea in the park? And I think also like men, particularly straight men, are socialized not to do things like that. But you can resist that socialization. You can do otherwise. It might take a little bit of a push, but I know that maybe you don't feel like you're able to. And then I thought, well, you know, you said that you're left to pick up the pieces. Probably, maybe that's your pieces, but also the relationships pieces. And you're saying you fucked financially. I think one thing that you can't really sort of leave for later is any like financial mess, because that is not something you can take your time on. That is something you need to deal with today. Yeah. Like when you need to write down what does it mean to be financially, and you need to take steps now, because that's not going to get easier, and it might prevent your life moving forward or your life growing in another way if you're really hindered by your finances. That has
and it's a worry that's trapped in your head. And you'll be liberated as soon as you address it. Because even though addressing it might not necessarily solve it, it'll give you some sort of plan, and it you can let that worry go. So
it might need to be quite radical, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like if you're living in a house that you can't afford, you're going to need to move out of that house, and that might be painful, but the sooner you can do it, the less like mortgage you're gonna have to pay, or the less you're gonna have debt, and that I don't know, you don't want that.
Yeah,
I've done that sold a house that I couldn't afford because of a breakdown of a relationship, and it was my dream house, and it's, I didn't want to sell it, and it went, and I moved to another house, and that's only bricks and mortar. It wasn't the end of the world, and I'm really happy where I am now, but I would actually quite like to sell this house and move somewhere else maybe, because where I make me home is where I make me home. It doesn't have to be a specific place. It's I think you can learn, you can get so much freedom from a crisis in your life that you didn't realize how much you would value in the longer term. So for Dan, once he starts to take a little step, I hope it will lead to another step, and then another step, and his whole world will open up. But for now, I do appreciate that, you know, it's not an overnight thing and it's difficult. So I love your suggestion, Gilly, about, you know, investing in relationships, not new relationships, friends, build up a social network is a fantastic suggestion. And lockdown is a tricky time. Try not to stay in the house all of the time. Sometimes even just stepping out, going out for a walk and seeing that physically seeing there's a bigger world out there is a very healthy thing to do. To just, when you stay in lockdown, keeps you in the house, so your world feels small, but if you go out even for a walk, you can engage with it in a bigger context, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. I think that sounds right. And I think also, you know, I think what both of you said about it taking time and not being able to rush that is really important. And I think I would refer back to the same advice that I gave a previous writer, which is like, rather than trying to think of like, okay, how can I build my entire new life at once? It's like, just do something different. Just find yourself when, you know, making little decisions, doing small things that are different, and see how that feels, you know, and pretty soon you'll start to see who that different version of you is, you know. And I think doing these small steps can be important. But I would, you know, I am also one to always recommend therapy, pretty much whatever the situation.
So yes.
I would also say, explore the possibility of seeing a therapist and having a few counseling sessions, because I think that can often be really, really useful to have a space where you can talk about things that you're worried about or afraid about or whatever, without worrying about judgment and without worrying about putting it on a friend who, you know, any self-consciousness around that. And I think that space can be really useful in navigating an uncertain time, and it, you know, doesn't have to be forever. I think, you know, I appreciate some people maybe don't think of themselves as someone who might go and see a therapist, but I think a lot more people see therapists than talk about it, for one. And I also think that, I don't know, for me personally, I'm in therapy currently, and I think that it's fantastic, and it's a fantastic way to have some support and have a specific space that's dedicated to negotiating this new thing that's happening, you know. And therapists are operating on Zoom right now. I know that.
I love therapy too. Yes, pro therapy. Mm. I hope that's enough, Dan. Let us know. We can't promise anything at gmail.com. Marion's gone or not.
Oh, I think, oh God, Marion has seemed to have disappeared. I wonder if that was her battery.
Marion. I mean,
oh, no.
Oh, well, never mind. It's a good job you're here, Greg.
Oh, well, I'm here anyway.
Shall we go to the next problem?
Yeah, let's go to the next problem.
You don't have to like do Marion's voice or anything.
So well, this is... that's lucky, because I don't think I could, and it would be offensive.
I mean, it reminds me of a show I performed in that was your show when the instruction was try to speak in Greg's accent, and that was very difficult.
Yeah, that was great. I love putting people in that position.
I did not know that was coming. Okay, so this is an anonymous person, and their problem says, Oh, but it's a female anonymous person. So she said, I live in a flat and a new resident has just moved in. She's elderly and doesn't get the social distancing. Oh, Marion's knocking on the door.
Oh, great. Oh, good.
Zoom.
Okay.
Marion's back.
There's the tone. Oh, Marion's back. Thank God.
Thank God. Marion, I was just reading out the last problem.
Do you know, isn't this exciting to have to switch devices?
God, we're just jazzing it all up.
Well, Marion is the queen of diversions. So that's like hey, but I'm saying, I'm getting a message saying we've only got 10 minutes left. So we're going to have to do this quickly. Okay, are you ready? Hi, I live in a flat and a new resident has just moved in. She's elderly and doesn't get the social distance thing. I also think she has a wee drink problem, always inviting neighbours in for a wee dram. What to do? I'm tempted to join her. So this is quick advice. Come on, come on.
Well, there's nothing wrong with sitting in your flat, fuzzled all day, if that's what you choose to do. Do you think?
I would say like
degrees of fuzzledness.
Don't join her. I would say don't join her because it's probably not very wise. There is still a deadly virus circulating. Don't go into anybody's house unless you really, really have to. It's not a good idea.
Yeah, I think I would agree, especially if it's as the writer says, it's an elderly person.
Yeah, help her protect herself. I do wonder if she's quite chatty, you could sort of say, oh, so are you having any support, or have you read the most recent social distance guidance? I think also offering to do things for her. So that she doesn't need to go out unless she really has to.
Well, she could just sit and have a chat outside if she wants. If she does want to have a drink with her, just have a chat outside, catch up, get to know her.
Do you think the person who's written in should really decide how involved they would like to get with this person? But you can get involved and not sort of commit your life to anything. But, you know, if you can spend 10 minutes now and again just having a chat, maybe the lady's lonely. Mm. And maybe just I like your suggestion, Greg, of sitting out. Could you sit outside, socially distanced, of course, and just have a little 10-15 minute chat? Would you like to take a cup of tea outside? You don't have to have, it doesn't have to be an alcoholic drink.
And that's true.
You know, so you could socialise without alcohol. I mean, I know I'm saying, well, you know, she wants to be sozzled all the time. But I'm really kidding, really, because who wants to sit sozzled in the house all the time? It would be quite a lonely thing to do. And maybe that inviting people in for a drink is her way of inviting some sort of communication or friendship, really, because maybe she's... You know, lockdown is difficult for lots of people if they don't have a big circle of friends or acquaintances or,
Also, like, if you do know your other neighbours, maybe if you're concerned about this person beyond, you know, your own sort of slight irritation, maybe it is worth, like, chatting to the other neighbours about what you can do collectively to support, or kind of a line that you share around, well, we're not going to go into this neighbour's house, but we are going to, like, take turns and support each other in supporting her or getting to know her.
Okay. And maybe collectively, the writer and a few of her neighbours could just kind of keep an eye on the neighbour and make sure that she has a little bit of company from time to time and maybe doesn't feel quite so isolated. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. It is.
Oh, it is. That was an easy one, wasn't it?
Well, I should
put some more pressure in future episodes where I'm like, okay, this is a 10-minute one. Got it.
Maybe my battery should go flat more often.
Maybe.
But see, Greg, I took your advice and tried something different and it was successful.
Great. There you go. Advice in action.
Wow. Wow. I hope that was okay for you, dear writer. I'm curious. Do let us know how your neighbour's getting along. Make sure you email wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com. Let us know. And we have now officially run out of problems. So this is a call for any and all problems. As you can tell, we can deal with all sorts. We can deal with all sorts of things. Unfortunately, we won't have Greg next time. Marion,
Greg, I think I'm going to miss you quite a lot next time.
I will be listening.
It has been absolutely wonderful having you on as a guest this week. I've really loved it, and I think you've been fantastic. Meeting.
Oh, great.
I'm going to become, you're going to be, we're going to have these conversations just for me and my problems from now on, Marion and Greg, because normally I would go to each of you separately and then put it to be together.
But now we can have a group session. Yeah.
Yeah, let's have to group workshop it.
Group workshop.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I've had a really good time, and I really hope that the letter writers get something out of it.
Yeah. Right.
Well, Greg, it's been a joy and a pleasure, and we hope to see you again soon back on with us.
See you sending us problems maybe one day.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I'll send a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
All right, then. Yes, anything, last things to say? Just we need more problems. wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com.
And any feedback, handy, you know, tips, hints, anything?
Like charge your devices before you start recording a radio show. That's my advice, Marion. Right, we're signing off now. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Star and shadow.